Hello, and welcome to AfterTalk Live. I'm Lisa Bogatin, co-founder of AfterTalk. We are at www.aftertalk.com, an interactive grief and bereavement website where you can write to your deceased loved ones and share with others if you wish. Today's show is titled Loss of a Child, Part 2. We are interviewing Jessica Elder, LMSW and LSSW. She is the bereavement program manager for the Children's Brain Tumor Foundation. Also here with us today is Jennifer and Tim. Jennifer and Tim both have lost a child. Tim, how would you know the question? How would you explain your grief journey? But you know, from what Jennifer said, it's really a dynamic. It's ongoing. It's you know, how would you share your experience? Put it that way.
Yeah, I agree with Jennifer that it is like a roller coaster ride, and it's a little bit different for a man versus a woman. And I think a lot of it has to do
with that was my next question.
Society. Sorry, society in general. But you know, it took us. My wife and I together, it took us about 7 years before our heads came out of the cloud and started seeing the mess that we had made between the time she had passed and that 7 year period. And I mean that, you know, because you're making decisions and you're doing things that affect your life and your children's lives, specifically financially, that, you know, have long-term effects, but you're not really cognitively thinking through the effects of what you're doing. And like I said, it took us about 7 years to get to that point and see, okay, you know, this is what we've done in the past. These are the decisions that we should have put off, and now we need to come back and fix all those things. Fortunately, we've done that now since then. But there's other, you know, there's things like that that people who are going through grief, you don't realize that that's what's happening.
You put everything on the back burner, and I guess you deal with the health and well-being of your child, the diagnosis, and trying to get your child better, and then poof, 7 years later, you know.
And then, like I was saying, is as you know, as the father or the man of the house, the way I see it, you're expected to take care of your family, and when you get something like this, a diagnosis like this, it's like, okay, how do I fix this? I have to be able to fix it because that's part of my job. And when you can't fix it, it's dealing with that reality. And what do you do? How do you deal with not being able to fix something?
Yeah.
That's the biggest challenge. And I guess I accepted the fact that she was going to die early on. I didn't tell my wife that, but I think I accepted that probably 2 weeks after her diagnosis, that she wasn't going to survive. And I started thinking forward 1 year at a time. Okay, in a year from now, this will be done. This will be over with. We'll know what the results are. We'll know whether she's going to survive or not. And I'll be able to deal with it at that point. And then when that year passed, I feel, okay, I got to look at a year again, a year ahead. I do that today, too. I'm constantly looking at least a year ahead. That's how I was able to cope year after year. And Jennifer's right. The first year is just horrible. I spent a lot of time. Most of our pictures are on the computer or digital, and I spent a lot of time with little pictures. And I can do that. My wife can't. You know, she has a more difficult time than I do. Everybody's different. Men and women, everybody's different.
Well, let me ask you and Jennifer this one question. If you knew now what you knew then, what would be your best advice about your journey and your path for those who are listening? Is there, and I'm sure there's many pearls of wisdom, but is there anything that comes to mind that you could share that would be your best advice?
Wow, that's a question I've actually never considered before. What would I have done differently in my circumstances, knowing what I know now?
No, if you knew now.
Knowing what I know now, like what would I have done differently in the beginning years? Grief, I think that's what you're asking?
That's exactly right, having to do with your grief journey.
Yeah, I would have, you know, it's such a scraping to the surface kind of experience every day. So it's a hard, you know, the fact that I am far from perfect, but to not have any glaring regrets is certainly no reflection on how well I do things, because I'm constantly flooding something, so to speak. But because it's such a scraping to the surface experience, it's so hard to even think of like what you did right or wrong. I guess something that I would want to know then, that I know now, is that there are no rules. So I'm a stay-at-home mom now, and when I had Joseph, we decided that I was going to stay home. And prior to that, I was a prosecutor in the city of Philadelphia, so I was a lawyer, and I really lived by a lot of rules. You know, whether I adhered to them or broke them, it
very
was
interesting.
Kind of immaterial, you know, but I knew what the rules were, and I knew what the law was. And then I could do whatever I wanted, you know, about that. But what this experience is, which is completely different than anything I had ever modeled myself after, is that there are no rules. And when Joseph first died, I had heard through some strange grapevine that there was like some steps to grieving, and I tried to find out what they were so that I could take the steps naturally. And then, you know, other people really wanted me to see a counselor, because then they could say, oh, well, we know she's okay because she's seeing a counselor, you know. So I did that for a little while. But what I learned in kind of poking my head into all these different avenues is that there are very few people that haven't experienced the loss of a child themselves that I think are able to help me. So sometimes, unfortunately, that bleeds into the areas of professionals as well. I didn't have a whole lot of luck with counselors, because I think that, like I said, this is its own ball of wax, and people think that because they've gone through and gotten their certificates that they can also counsel on this, and I'm sure that there are some people that can, that have had more positive experiences than I did. But what I ended up doing eventually, after a lot of searching, is finding a group in Maine that meets biannually, where there are about 40 bereaved families. And the thing that I found most helpful, besides journaling, and some reading, is actually just sitting with other bereaved parents and listening to them and sharing some of my stories, but really listening to them and what they've experienced, whether they're behind me or ahead of me in the grief process. And I think that go back and do one thing differently, it would be to somehow have skipped all those other all the other ways that I stumbled along the way to try to find what the rules were and what the steps were, because there are none. And it's really, I think the hardest part about it is that what works for one person won't necessarily work for another, and you really need to pave your own way. And that's what's the hardest thing. You know, people say, tell me what you need from me. Well, I don't know what I need from you, because I don't even know what I need from me. And that's really the hardest thing, is because it's really the blind leading the blind, so to speak, throughout the whole entire thing.
So interesting. You know, what you're saying is there's no road back, there's no navigation, and this thing called grief has no rule book, like being a prosecutor.
Most professions, you know, there's medical books, there's dictionaries, there's everything out there, but there's no rule book for grief, and that's, you know, there couldn't be. There's so many unique paths. But the flip side is that there's also no rule book for other people to follow, and they don't know what to do, and along the way they end up hurting you. I probably ended up hurting them, you know, and it's just a really tough path. It's hard to be the person who is bereaved, and now that I'm a little bit further out, I realize that it's probably pretty challenging to be on the other side of the fence too.
Yeah.
So that's, I think
it's said very, very, you've said it beautifully and encapsulated, you know, that the rules are, there's no rules, there's no roadmap, there's no navigation, you know, no GPS, and it's obviously a personal journey that you have to check in with yourself and try to have clarity moment by moment by moment. Hey, Tim, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes.
I was just going to say, from listening to other people, you learn what works for them. So, I mean, and then you can kind of sample those things on your own, you know. But that's the most you can really do.
Tim, for you, is there something you, looking back, if you knew now what you knew then, you know, what would be your best advice?
I think Jennifer said it really well. I do agree with her, and I realize everybody's different. There is no right or wrong. What we did, which is a little bit contrary to your question, is we did not go to counseling, but we took the kids to counseling. And like I said, I focused on a year ahead all the time. And a lot of times, you know, don't listen to what people tell you. Because there's some people, you know, I'll share a story with you. When my daughter first died, actually about 6 months after she died, I had a man come up to me that I knew over the years professionally, and he said, don't worry. This guy didn't have any kids. He said, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. It's time for you to get over it. He goes, I remember when my dog died, and I felt really bad, but I got over it.
Oh, God. Oh, God. I was the only
like
thing
that
he could relate to, I guess.
In fact, from his perspective and from my perspective, of course, I'm thinking, I want to just kill you for saying that. You're comparing my daughter to your dog. But
crazy.
Everybody's journey is different. But like I said, I think Jennifer said it really well.
And now let me ask Jessica. In your experience, what type of support, involvement, activities do bereaved parents benefit from, emotionally, and other specific organizations or support groups that we can say, on air that you have recommended, in addition, of course, to the Children's Brain Tumor Foundation, which I'm going to ask you about later.
Sure. Well, Jennifer and Tim explained a lot of how I would answer that question. So a lot of this depends on the person, the style of grieving they have, their history with grief experience, what type of support system they have. Some people find it very helpful to talk and to reach out to others and to express their emotions, while others prefer to be more physical and active, kind of like Tim was saying how he wanted to fix things. So, people have very different grieving styles, but I have to say in general, most parents will tell me that simply connecting with other bereaved parents is the most helpful thing that they can do. When parents connect with each other, they report feeling less isolated, more understood, more validated and supported. And, parents connect and share feelings and thoughts and experiences that only grieving parents can truly understand. And, they also like to connect with parents who've been bereaved for a longer period of time. And I'm not saying all bereaved parents, but a lot of the parents that I work with. So, for example,
head of the grieving process.
Yeah, like for example, our organization has a mentor program, and we also have an online support group. And some parents in the support group have been bereaved for 5 to 10 years, while others have been bereaved for just a few months or a few years. And of course, they always have things in common, and they can always relate with each other. But the parents who've been bereaved for just a little bit of time, they seem to get hope from talking to those parents who've been bereaved for a longer period of time, because they like to hear how bereaved parents got through certain challenges and certain experiences. They also can hear from other bereaved parents that they've, that they do in fact experience joy again at some point, and that, the pain does lift a little at some point. And, this can be very, very helpful for parents. And so I really think that finding a community of bereaved parents, whether that be through a bereavement organization like mine or through a grief camp, through the internet, whatever works for people, through an in-person support group, that can definitely be one of the most, it probably is one of the most important things that, a lot of parents talk about doing in order to help themselves feel better. And, a support system in general, whether that be family, friends, professionals. And, as Jennifer said, grief counseling and therapy is definitely not for all parents. A lot of parents try it and, don't find it that helpful, but some do really find it helpful. And I think, again, this depends on certain factors, including how a person copes and what kind of existing support system they have, what their expectations of the counseling are, so what they expect to get out of counseling, because we know counseling can't change grief and can't, take the loss away, of course, but it might give them the support that they're, you know, lacking from other support systems, or that might just, you know, help them process their grief. And, you know, the relationship with the therapist could be very important. So, you know, parents can consider counseling. It's not for everybody, and parents should certainly consider it if they might be having a complicated grief response, you know, which is when a parent's struggling to the point where she or he feels unable to care for himself or others, or if they can't function, they can't work, they can't leave bed. And I'm not referring to the beginning of the grieving process, because many parents feel like they can't, that it's difficult to function at that point. But later on, if those feelings continue. And, you know, they also really benefit from maintaining an ongoing relationship, a continuing bond with their child. That's tremendously helpful for parents. So finding ways to stay connected to their child, whether that be having conversations with them, writing letters to them, you know, creating memorials. It's really
funny, because what I was going to share, I'm looking at my little cheat sheets here, and the undercurrent of aftertalk is connected to continuing bonds. And we always say, you know, death ends a life, but not a relationship. And what I wanted to ask, you know, Jennifer and Tim, is if they continue to share their day-to-day with Paige and Joseph, special events, birthdays. How do you maintain continuing bonds?
You want to go ahead,
Jennifer. Jennifer and Tim, whoever wants to answer. I mean, how do you maintain your continuing bond with Joseph and Tim with Paige?
I think that, you know, I'm one of those people who's had a huge shift in my spirituality and belief system since Joseph died. I don't really have, you know, without really getting into that, I don't really know how I feel about the afterlife and the heaven concept. You know, again, not discounting anything, but I don't know what my feelings are about that, which makes the continuing bond sometimes a little challenging. I don't write letters to him or necessarily speak to him as I've heard about some other parents doing. But I do have a tiny little mantra that I say at night, kind of to him, in case by some miracle he is out there and he is listening. I would want him to not feel abandoned. I would want him to know that he's on my mind all the time. So I do that. And I also think that a way I really stay connected to him is through my other kids. Whether that's fair or not, time will tell. But we have Thomas, who was born 10 days after he was diagnosed. And then 2 years later, we had little Brian. And then I also have a one-year-old girl named Daisy. And I make it a real daily... Yeah, I make it a real point and a real daily practice to, you know, we still have all his toys laying around. He was little and they're little. They play with them and his picture's up. And I make a point to always tell them what his favorite things were, what foods he liked, what he didn't like, his favorite colors if we're doing art. And I really, really make a huge effort to incorporate him into all of those conversations. And the days with little guys are very busy, so that goes by real fast. But they ride his tricycle, and they're excited when they can be big enough to use it, and all of those things. So I try to incorporate him in our conversations and interactions at every chance, not ad nauseum, but, you know, in an organic way at every chance that I can. And I actually overheard Thomas, who's now 6, telling Brian, who's almost 4, that Daisy would really like Joe when she gets to know him the other day.
Aww.
And I thought that, you know, that to me was kind of like, okay, you know, there's about 100,000 things I've done wrong in this life, but maybe, just maybe, I've done a small thing right, because he thinks he knows him, and so does Brian, who never met him, and they think Daisy's going to know him and that she's going to like him. And so I think that's how I keep him, you know, alive, because I keep him really as a part of our family. Whenever I
think
can,
this is all continuing bonds, by the way. I think
yeah.
This is continuing bonds.
Mm-hmm.
I get that it is. Your way.
Without making it
and
weird.
That's okay.
You know, I don't set a place for him at the table. That would probably be a little bit strange.
I don't know,
you know,
who does that necessarily. But.
You know, but I try to keep him involved at every chance I can. You know, so if I'm, you know, writing everyone's names, I'll write his too for a random art project or something. And that has seemed to work so far. And I'm sure that'll have to develop as we develop as a family. But that's where we are now.
Tim, do you do
I'd
the
like
same
to add
types of things?
Oh. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Who's that? Jessica?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'd just like to add to what Jennifer's saying, though. I don't think continuing bonds have to be spiritual. I think it's a way of keeping the love alive. It's a way of keeping the bond alive, and that's exactly what Jennifer seems to be describing. So some people can make it very spiritual, and it doesn't really have to be. So those are. I'm really glad Jennifer was able to share those examples, because I think
there's
no
rules for that either.
Ways. Absolutely.
Right. No rules. And Kim, how about you? Is there anything that dances around in terms of how you continue your bond with Paige?
Yeah, religiously, my dad was a preacher for First Assembly of God Church, and we're a preacher's kid. I don't practice, but I know that my dad's faith and mine as well were pretty rattled. My dad's really rattled. When Paige died, when it was diagnosed, because, of course, being religious that way, you expect full healing to come any day now, and when it doesn't happen, it changes things. And I was angry for a long time. But I've gotten past that, that part of it. But what we do at home is we talk about Paige often. Before my dad died, he painted made a painting for us of Paige. My dad was an artist, so that painting hangs in our house. We have pictures of her, of course, throughout the house, including the other kids. And we just talk about her often. She was unique from the other two. She was, at 3 years old, putting herself to bed at night. When she got tired, she went to bed. She wasn't afraid of the dark. She ate vegetables without a challenge, and the other two didn't. She was the one who separated them when they were fighting. And these are all the other two kids also are old enough to remember these things. And we just, like I said, we talk about her often. We talk about her sometimes as if she's still with us in spirit, even though we know she's not there. We still have her bike, her tricycle, and, some of her, my wife wanted to keep some of her clothes and shoes and things, and we have those put away. They're just things that were hers, her blankets, specific things that, where we are able to keep a physical connection to her, even though she's not with us. And, the smaller kids that come around now that are 2 and 3 years old now ride her same tricycle around. So it's those kind of feelings for me that allow us to keep her alive. In addition to that, with just about 9 months after she died, we participated in the American Cancer Society relay and made a team in her name, and we created a nonprofit organization a few months after that, also in her name, which we raised money. We did that for about 3 years. So we still do ongoing fundraising and different things that I'm involved with to be able to keep her name going. To give her a purpose, the purpose as to why she died, something positive to come out of it.
It's meaning making. I mean, that's what a lot, to create meaning, in her name. If I had to summarize kind of like what I'm coming away from this interview with, whether it be your grief journey, that you've verbalized so eloquently, both you, Kim, and Jennifer, but also the continuing bonds, there are no rules. Everybody's walk is different. There's no navigation, there's no rule book, not only for grief, but also for, the continuing bond and the meaning making. You have to make up your own path and listen to what's inside, to help you lead the way. We're going to end soon, but I just want to say, Jessica, would you like to share briefly about the Children's Brain Tumor Foundation? And because I want anybody who's listening to be able to have access to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Thank you. Well, we're a national nonprofit, so we provide support services, education, and advocacy for families of children affected by brain or spinal cord tumors. We also fund brain tumor research. We provide support programs for families receiving treatment, for adolescent, young adult brain tumor survivors. And the program that I provide is a bereavement support program for families of children either receiving end-of-life care or families who have been bereaved. experience the loss of a child to a brain or spinal cord tumor, although we would offer support to any bereaved parent who contacted us. And our bereavement program consists of online and telephone counseling, online support groups that take place in a live chat room, a bereaved parent mentor program. In fact, both Tim and Jennifer are mentors in my bereavement program, our mentor program. So that's one of the ways that I came in contact with them. And we also offer a private Facebook community for parents to get together. So we really aim to bring parents together, and we help create that community. And we also do a lot of referrals to places. So we don't offer in-person support. So I always help families find in-person support in their local areas if they're looking for it. And if people want to
all over.
Yes, absolutely. There are programs all over, and our programs are national. So again, any bereaved parent who is looking for an online support group or a parent to talk to, or a Facebook community that's very private but brings a supportive group of families together, that's what we offer in our bereavement program. And we can be contacted at 866-228-4673, and I can be contacted by email at jelder, which is J-E-L-D-E-R, at cbtf.org.
Great, great. Well, let me just say, Jessica, Jennifer, Tim, I cannot thank you enough for participating in this interview. I hope it's left you uplifted in some ways and confident that you made a difference to someone listening. There's also this wonderful book called Meaningful Moments. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, Ritual and Reflection When a Child Dies by Raina Limbo and Kathy Kobler. It's a wonderful reference and friend if somebody is on a path of healing from loss of a child. Thank you very much for tuning in today to After Talk Live. You can visit our website at www.aftertalk.com, where you can write to your deceased loved ones and share with family, friends, or a therapist. It may be of interest also to our group today. We've launched a wonderful new column called Ask Dr. Niemeyer, who's one of the foremost experts in grief and bereavement. And he has answered several questions to bereaved parents. Please send any questions you have for Dr. Niemeyer to ask at aftertalk.com. And until the next time, wishing you well. Jessica, Jennifer, Tim, thank you so much, and we'll be in touch very, very shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim. Thank you.
Thanks.